45 seconds, we'll be on the air, and we got some good news tonight. Good news. Don't get to say that very often, but with all the world going askew, great news coming your way for our family. On the show tonight, David Whitley will be joining us in just a moment. We also got a report in from out in Texas, where Dan Bond is standing by, and Dan Bond is going to be giving us the latest on what's happening with gymnastics. And this is Tuesday night. That means it's Laura Meadows time. He'll have trivia for you, goodies for you, plus our good news. So stay tuned. Coming up next, David Whitley right around the corner in the Orange and Blue Room on the Buddy Martin Show tonight. Tell your friends and neighbors we're on the air.
Yes, it's time again for Buddy Martin. Call him up and tell him what you're thinking. But be kind, because he's doing the best he can.
Better. Stronger. Faster.
Mama says that alligators are ornery because they got all them teeth but no toothbrush.
Hey, what if the voice calls while you're gone?
Take a message.
Bye.
Ready, champ?
I'm ready for this my whole life.
I'm incapable of small talk. But that's why you love me, right?
Kind of intimidating to be in the presence of so many great athletes.
Welcome to the program. I'm Buddy Martin. This is the Buddy Martin Show, and we're loading it up right now as we speak. And we're going to try to get our buddy on the phone. Just one second. We're trying to get our Lauren Meadows tribute loaded in tonight, stuff that we have to get done before the show. We screwed up. We didn't get it done, okay? Okay, so we screwed up. We'll get it ready to go here in a minute. Lauren does a lot of trouble, a lot of good stuff here Lauren does for us, and among them is he goes to Spurrier's Gridiron Grill, and he gets the trivia question every Tuesday night, lines up the, here it comes. Okay, now we've got the video ready to go. And so here, I have got some wonderful news for the Martins tonight. If you've been following us, you'll know this story. We lost a family member recently, literally, and our pet Sammy, a little taco, as he's called, terrier. And we've had him for, you know, year and a half, 2 years, Brendan's dog, Stella's dog. He's become so special to all of us. Well, he left, ran off on Thursday night while Brendan was doing the show, and we couldn't find him. And we were so sad. And it was our family's, you know, it's our family pet. And our granddaughter Stella was beside herself. Brendan was upset. Our whole family was. And so we about given up hope on Sammy, and thinking, well, we've tried all the shelters. We posted it everywhere on every social media known to man. And we've been 5 days and we're not hearing anything. And we're starting to hold, you know, we're leaving lights on for Sammy at night. Hashtag pray for Sammy. All of our friends. It's been on the radio locally for our friend Tom Schmitz. It's been everywhere. And so many people have tried to help. And is one thing about our community is that they do help. And everybody tried so hard, and we just couldn't make it happen. And it was getting tough to keep up our confidence, and then this happened. And we are so proud that we've got Sammy home. There he is, the old rascal. Haven't seen him yet. There he is with Brendan. Brendan got the call today. A nice lady picked him up on the boulevard and had been holding him, taking care of him, took him to a shelter. There was no room for him. She would have to take him to the kill shelter. She refused to. She took him home. And she saw Brendan's post the last few days about Sammy, please, Sammy, come home. And she got a hold of Brendan, and there he is. There's our Sammy boy. He's back, and we're so happy. We cannot wait. My wife and I, Joni, have been waiting to see him. And sometimes you just have to keep having faith, don't you? It's hard, but here it is. Brendan's favorite is always the bicycle horn and all that kind of stuff. And so there's a little final thing for Sammy. So he's home. Thanks for allowing me to get that in. It's important to us, and we're just delighted. Okay, let's go to the Orange and Blue Room. We'll even put off our commercial because we kept this gentleman busy with personal business on Sammy. It's tough to get upstage by a dog sometimes, but you know what? Some things are just important. Good evening to you, David Whitley.
Good evening. That was great. I would say Happy Valentine's Day, but obviously it's a joyous Valentine's Day around the Martin household.
Yes, it certainly is. Thank you. But you can say it, and we'll say it right back to you. Happy Valentine's Day to you, David. Appreciate you being on the show. Always love having you, and it's always a fun night with you. How are you doing?
Oh, I am just fine. Thank you. It's been a good Valentine's Day. Not as good as yours.
No, well, that's hard to beat that, right?
So, yeah.
But good. It's good to have friends and people in the community where people care enough to do things like that, you know? So I'll just say thank you to everybody. Let me just say good evening to David Baldoff and Becky Smith Carlisle. Dan Mond will be hearing from him later on stuff regarding gymnastics. Scott O. Schneider, David Friedman, Michael Burton, Jerry Battagliano, Larry Gross, all the folks checking in, David, to see you, the star of the show, and it's great to be with you again. I always think of stories that come up during the week. Like, this is a David Whitley show story, I know, and as a longtime journalist, and you have done many, many good stories. I want to get your take on a couple of things before we move forward to the obvious, if possible, and we'll talk, obviously, college football, which is always big around here. We got some rankings out from ESPN on the SEC. But the story that kind of intrigued me, among others, skip all the commercials in the halftime show, was the lousy job the NFL did on the turf, David. Can you imagine that? They spent 2 years preparing this grass in a Phoenix sod farm, all right?
Right.
And they rolled it every day for the 2 weeks at a cost of $800,000, okay? And they wouldn't even let the halftime show be held on the turf because they're afraid it might hurt it. Well, you saw what happened. It's a piece of crap. And it's devastating. You have all these high-priced athletes running around out there on the biggest game of the year anywhere, and they can't get turf to grow it right so it won't come up. Did you see that, David? What do you think of it?
Anybody who tuned in saw it. And, I mean, it was just a head-scratcher because, you know, that's not one of those variables that nobody saw coming. You know, it's just something that you figure that, I mean, they have unlimited resources to hire the finest agronomist in the world and get this thing set out. You remember, I'm sure you remember the name George Toma.
I do.
The guy who was, was he from Kansas City? He was like their grounds guy, but he was so good that
he was our legend.
Bring him in every year.
Yeah,
to work the turf at where. And of course, this was the old days when they didn't have turf that they would have on a conveyor belt outside that they could move inside. It was the turf that was actually at the LA Coliseum or the Orange and wherever they might be playing that year. But, you know, George Toma would come in a few weeks early and start seeding it up. And those are, there was nothing like this. And you know, I'm sure that somewhere in New York that night in the bowels of the NFL headquarters, whoever's left there, you know, they were thinking, you know, someone's head has to roll about this.
I would think so.
I mean, because this is obvious. Your show. This is the ultimate, and just something that is to just be so easily handled. You'd think. I mean, I know that there's a lot to making a nice turf, but you know, everybody. I can't recall a turf that bad, except for rain, that I saw even in a college football season this year, where you know, because it was perfect conditions, and yet, I mean, and you know, of course they painted too much stuff on there. That might have had something to do with it, but even then, that's no excuse because they know what paint does and if it's slick or not. I mean, you almost think that maybe they should have a dry run, have guys go out there that Saturday night and, you know, make some cuts and stuff.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I would think that, you know, there's been so much analysis about the game and what, and so much, you know, about the, you know, that call, that holding call that was, they say was too ticky-tack and the turned the game right there with a minute left. You know, I think, you know, just give 10% of that attention to the turf. Yeah. And I want somebody from the NFL to explain que pasa.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're supposed to have the best of everything. Well, anyway, so any other thoughts before we close the book on the Super Bowl and move to other things?
I think probably the guy, the happiest guy and the luckiest man for being traded from the Giants.
Say that again, because part of it dropped out. You said Kadarius Toney.
Yeah, I think the luckiest man on earth is Kadarius Toney, Florida's own. You know, because he went from being just an outcast in New York to the belle of the ball in KC. And you know, if you were a receiver and you said, what team would I like to go play for? What quarterback? What coach?
Yeah,
you know, in the history of the NFL, you couldn't come up with many more better picks than Kansas City right now.
Yeah,
and it looks like it's just a great situation for him. Congratulations to him. I hope he takes full advantage of it. I mean, he already has, you know.
Yeah, I always liked him. For the first time, he came aboard from 8 Mile, Alabama, and I watched him work out and saw his moves, and I really loved his game. And I had a lot of conversation with coaches and players and different things about why can't they get Toney on the field? Mm-hmm. And I was told by people who used to coach the position, he's just not ready for it yet. He didn't know doesn't know his routes. I'm thinking, you got raw talent. You figure a way. And by the way, didn't Kansas City figure a way to get him the ball on the punt return for the all-time longest punt return ever, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you saw him in his element there, just in the open field in space and just doing his crazy pogo stick runs. And I mean, that is when he would be the guy. You've seen that dodgeball thing on ESPN, where guys chase around. It's one of these crazy leagues now, you know, where they just jump around and it's just like the old tag that you see, but it's a real sport now. Kadarius Toney would be my number one pick in the world in a game of tag. He can disappear.
And I don't know. I'm not smart to figure it all out, but I know this: if he catches the ball and runs fast, Urban Meyer once told me that his whole offense is based on simply getting the ball into a person in space. That's it. Yeah. He had a pretty good name, Percy Harvin, did all right in that position, and there were unfair comparisons made to Kadarius Toney early on. But that's the kind of back he was. He wasn't nearly the back. And I'm thinking to myself, even I could figure out how to get this guy the ball. I mean, really. And he didn't do much for 2 years. And I kept saying, what is the deal? And I said, he's not ready yet. Not ready? What do you look for? Speed, right? Speed. And he could catch the ball pretty good. I don't know. It just gets me so frustrated. I'm thinking, well, maybe I'm stupid. I don't know, David. But I'm sure.
Well, that's another story.
Yeah, that's another program right there. So that's that. All right, so let's move on from the Super Bowl is behind us. We won't get into baseball too much, although you and I both like it a bit. There have been changes. We talked to David Bolton last night about some of the changes with the pitch clock, and I don't think they're going to allow you to put players on one side. All that stuff changes. I guess the Rays start this weekend, so I'll be paying attention. You probably won't, but I will be a little bit. So,
yeah, the Gators are starting their season. Yeah.
I know, that's what we're all looking forward to.
And but you're right. There's that's another whole whole column slash show on baseball, and of course, there's been a lot of most thing I've seen pushed back on is putting a ghost runner on second
that rule or not?
No. It reeks of a beer league softball kind of move. You know, I don't, because if you look at the stat that there really aren't that many extra inning games, and especially there aren't many that go beyond 10 or 11 innings. I could see, like, back in the day they did that with women's softball I don't know when they switched, but that was when the mound was even closer and nobody, I mean, if it was 2-0, it was a blowout. So there were, I mean, every game almost went to extra innings. So I could see it in that, but that's not the situation here, you know? And it just seems like the people in charge are trying to reach an audience, that's not there. And they're turning off the audience that is there.
Baseball's never been good on a clock, and there's many things we'd like to see different. Like, we'd like to see them stop throwing over the first 8 times.
Yeah.
But if you do that, you change the game dramatically. And as much as I'd like to see it, It would never work. I don't know how you feel about the shift. I go back to the day when they called it the Ted Williams shift, you know, and the Indians pulled it on the Red Sox and Lou Boudreau and whatever. Now they take it to another art form and analytics. I still like a little mindless baseball, maybe a couple, three or four innings a night is good for me just to sit down and watch the game and not get so jazzed up. Let's talk about a sport, and we're going to do this later with Dan Bond. But first, I'm going to do this real quick commercial and come back, grab you, only get your thoughts about gymnastics. Killing it. Unbelievable what they're doing. And, and we'll talk about what later on with Dan Bond, who covers the gymnastics. Stand by.
Things have certainly got a little out of hand lately when it comes to just buying our everyday necessities. Just look at gas, streaming services, and heck, even chicken wings. Well, there is one necessity that shouldn't cost a ton: taking care of yourself and helping fix all the aches and pains in life. And the fine folks at Titan MRI agree. With costs a fraction of what you'd pay at a hospital, you'll not only save money, you'll be taken care of by staff with over 20 years experience. So when you need an MRI, call Titan first, and you can go where your doctors send their families. Now offering CAT scans.
All right, thanks very much, Jeff Cardoza. Good to see him with the Steve Spurrier Way unveiling last Friday night. Great time there. Many great fans, great Gators out there as well. So if I said to you, I'm going to make a bet with you, and I said, all right, look, let's bet on which will have the biggest crowds. We won't even take the O-Dome or Zach Tech Arena, whatever you want to call it. Well, let's take the Merriment Center out in Baton Rouge, right? Big football country, right? I mean, that's what they live and breathe for, right? And you say, okay, so I'm going to bet you what will be the biggest crowd this year at the Merriment Center, and what's it for? What would you say?
Well, because I know what our topic is, I would guess, Jim. But before that, I would have certainly just gone. Of course, their basketball team isn't doing that well, at least men's. Women's, maybe women's basketball, if they had South Carolina coming and they pumped it up, something like that. Mm-hmm. But knowing what we know, that this being the hotbed of that sport that we're talking about, and LSU, it's a hot thing there. And they've got, the queen of gym, at least the most popular gymnast, and
not
in
America, the best, but
certainly the most popular. So I would love to be there Friday night for that.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of thing that, they'd be scalping. Mm-hmm. Who thought they'd be scalping tickets? I'm wondering what the secondary market is in Baton Rouge to get in and see that.
Really? Yeah. So number two, Florida, and number eight, LSU. They have a dual meet this weekend. I mean, the top-ranked match in the country at the Pete Maravich Assembly Center. And LSU led the nation in last year in attendance, averaging 11,691. I'm reading from Dan's story, which is in Gatorade. Mm-hmm. And then they ended the 18-year run of Utah. But here's the thing about it, is that they're about to set the record, the biggest crowd of the year, and they had the at the Merriment Center, and the biggest crowds of the year at the Exact Tech Center are not basketball. The hardest ticket to get right now is gymnastics, and it's unbelievable the popularity of this sport. I mean, you can't help but watch these amazing athletes, and what they're flying through the air with the greatest of ease, to use the old line. So yeah, it's Friday night. They have this big match. I want to say game. And so it's going to be Florida versus LSU, and it's going to be the biggest crowd of the year in the Merriment Center. So that's amazing, isn't it?
And it is funny, and I tell people when they haven't been to one of those Friday nights at the O-Dome, that you really have to go there to experience it. I mean, you can see it on TV, but that is really something that to truly appreciate, you got to go and see, because it's like a four-ring circus, with everything going on at once, and just trying to follow it is a little difficult, but I tell you, there's never a dull second in it, as opposed to virtually any other sport. I mean, if you're tired of, you look down here and they're doing the vault, you look down here, they're on the beam, and what they do is amazing. And it's no coincidence that every 4 years, you know, one of those popular sports is gymnastics, because it is just so visually enthralling. I mean, you see what they do, and it's just mind-boggling.
You know, great point about the intensity level, and it's sustained in the way it's televised. There's something going on every second. You can't stop. You can't look away. You know, you're trying to figure out, oh, they're going to fall off the beam, or can I get the landing stick it right? And so it's a lot of action going on. So I'm looking forward to that. And Dan is going to be later. It's kind of my gymnastics coach. He's teaching me about this, learning about scoring and learning about whatever. So it's going to be great fun.
Just remember, the Russian judge always cheats.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Always. I grant you that. All right. So, let's talk football. All right, so now we're going to start thinking about what's ahead in the season. Football season ended officially with the Super Bowl. Forgive me for not saying spring ball and USFL and Shane Matthews and all the things that go on with the XFL and USFL, all that stuff. But right now, the real football season's over. So now I'm turning my page. I'm thinking, whatever happened to Oklahoma, Texas? You know, thinking, all right, now what's going on here? And I'm thinking about it a little bit, and Feinbaum had some stuff on, and so people were off the charts excited about it. And even the writer from Oklahoma, well, you know, you wait. And so maybe the bloom was off the rose a little bit. But think about how dramatically, 2024. David, we grew up in a different time in a different SEC, and now we're talking about Oklahoma, Texas. I mean, there was a time where Texas and Oklahoma both, they were the dominant programs. And so I started thinking, okay, what's that going to do to the scheduling? You know, what's going to be in their so-called quad, however they do it? They're not going to have divisions, but you have to have regular rivalries. How in the world do you settle on that? You know, you got to have Florida, Georgia. Do you have Florida, LSU? You know, what do you lose and all that? And then I thought, you know what else is happening? Arch Manning is going to be playing next year. Arch Manning, the golden boy, actually he's the golden grandson of the golden boy, and the longtime family and the Super Bowls they won and Heisman's they won. And here he is, man. Talk about a legacy. Five-star quarterback from Isidore Newman in New Orleans. Number one recruit in the 2023. He's a Longhorn. And so he's one of the four or five star quarterbacks in the class of 2023. That's going to get it juiced up. Have you started thinking about all that yet?
Oh, I couldn't, you know, and it was really nice to hear that they finally got that out of the way. Will they come in 2024, 2025?
Yeah.
And so, cause that's been hanging over everybody and just holding everything up, it seems like. And it just made some sense from a timing and everything standpoint. And of course, easy for me to say, because I'm not the one that's paying $50 million to get out from under the contract. But obviously they crunched the numbers.
Chump change. What's $50 million?
Yeah, it's crazy to say, but it's pretty much half chump change these days. Because they crunched the numbers and they realized, no, you're still going to come out ahead, even if you pay that early exit fee. Yeah. And it's sort of weird in a way. This is a last year. You know, I hate to call it the old SEC, because it's the old SEC went out with when A&M and Missouri came in.
Well, Georgia Tech was a member, and Tulane was a member. I mean, that's not that long in my lifetime, at least.
That's good in a way to historically that when you were kicking, you know, if you were 100 years old right now, you're thinking, no, the old SEC was that. Says, and I can't believe this new SEC. And then the old SEC was pre-Missouri, Texas A&M, and now, you know, we're the old guys, and we're thinking, oh man, this is crazy. And in 20 years, when I presume there will always be an SEC. I hate to think of the day.
May not be, because
even if this turns into the complete junior NFL, that they will still have under the banner of SEC and some sort of organization where these Southern teams, you know, that it's not going to be Florida playing Illinois 1 week and Iowa, and Washington, or just
David,
whatever.
I was Nostradamus when I predicted this 25 years ago. I said there'd be one super conference, and I wrote this down, and said there would be 65 to 70 teams in it. They'd be in different regions of the country, just like they do now in basketball, and they'd play up for the national championship. and they get rid of those little crappy games they have and during the year and the postseason bowl games, all those that serve a purpose. How did I know how right I was? This is what's happening. I don't think it'll go that far. You got to have that regional identity, and you got to have those conferences. It's a challenge because you mix up the conferences. You think, wait a minute, where are they from? What league are they in? You think, whatever happened to the Big East? Oh, let's go. You know, it gets confusing, doesn't it? It's like trying to remember all your passwords.
Yeah. And now I suspect that, you know, that they will maybe have like an AFC, NFC kind of thing, or four divisions where they will. You know, because I can't imagine that the power brokers will come to the conclusion at some point. You know, these rivalries, you know, they don't count that much. You know, Florida shouldn't be worried that much about playing Tennessee or Georgia or LSU. Let them play, or Ohio State. They shouldn't be playing Penn State and Michigan. You know, they have to. I mean, that is one of the true things, that the essence of college football. And you know, I think fans have been battered enough, especially in the last 2 years, watching the traditions go away, you get the feedback that I do, and people are just saying, "Gosh, it's just between the professionalism of it all and the portal, and the money coming in. Even if they're for it, it's just been a shock to the system. And if they laid on top of this, well, we're getting rid of rivalries too, because it'll be a better TV game to watch Florida play USC. Yeah, it'll be a great game as opposed to then." They won't go that far. I mean, you have to maintain the rivalries, because that's what, that's what you sit around when you're old men and talk about, that Tennessee game, and the Peyton Manning game and the Spurrier game and against Auburn and those kind of things. That's I trust that they will never sell their souls totally, in the pursuit of dollars, just to get rid of those traditional rivalries that have made the sport what it is.
All right, David, I'm going to give you this SEC story because it's all the way too early stuff. And who knows who picks these, but just for the sake of a conversation, here's the list that came out today. ESPN ranked each college football team for next season in the SEC. Okay? I'm going to give you these, all right? And by the way, news is that Kevin Sumlin was hired as Maryland's next co-offensive coordinator, so he finally got a job. We know about what's happened with Todd Monken. He's leaving. Mm-hmm. He's going to go to work for the Cowboys. Monken, and that question is, what they do? Well, Mike Bobo is waiting in the wings. And those programs pay off sometimes, where you got those coaches sitting there, and Bobo has been successful before. So we'll see how that changes. But things always change. So here it is right here. Where would you think Florida would land in the middle of these? Well, actually, these are the SEC teams' rankings in general. These are not ranked by per. In other words, these are the numbers assigned to them. Like number 77 was Vanderbilt, or 71. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's other. They took each team, they ranked them all, and as you might expect, well, who do you think's first?
Well, I think those Dogs.
Dogs are first. Alabama's second. Yeah. Actually, Alabama's fourth. And they're second in the SEC. Yeah. The number six team in the country is Tennessee. That's a team I like a lot. I think they're going to be good. LSU's right behind them. We'll see if they can sustain it. Seven. Texas A&M's up a bit. They're at 17. And Ole Miss is 18. And, yes, Florida made their top 20 at number 20. After that, it's Mississippi State at 23rd. Kentucky, 24th. Auburn, 26th. I'm a little surprised at that. I think Auburn's going to be better than that. Arkansas, 29th. Sounds a little low to me. Missouri, 32nd, about right. And here's the one that surprises me. South Carolina is 33rd. With all the stuff they got going on, the good all season they've had, I think that's way too low. And, of course, that one's in Vanderbilt. So, obviously, this guy, he doesn't have much love for South Carolina or Auburn. What do you think about that?
Well, the whole thing, and I saw that right before I came out, just flipping around, and I saw Florida ranked 20th, and I went a double take, and I just had a minute, and I saw the methodology behind it, and it seems like they've really gone into the analytics on this stuff, and the amount of returning points, blah, blah, blah. Yep. You know, just the eye test, I go, what? You know, how could Auburn be, what'd you say, like 16 places ahead of South Carolina. You know, I mean, I think Hugh Freeze is going to get it going there pretty well, but I don't think he's going to get, you know.
You're absolutely right.
He's two years behind what Beamer's doing.
I don't understand that at all.
Yeah.
Auburn is 26, and South Carolina is, hang on a second. I agree with you. That's the question.
It sounds like maybe the computer was also weighted with a little SEC favoritism because, you know, it sounds like the 12th, 13th worst team in the SEC is in the top 35. So that means that, you know, let's see, one third of the top 35 teams are in the SEC. And we know the SEC is good, but I'm thinking, man, is it the conference going to be that good? I'm a little surprised that I think that this may be the only poll that the Gators are ranked in the top 20 preseason wise in.
That's true. I'm surprised they'd be ranked that high. I thought in a program they'd rank 29th, 30th, whatever.
Yeah, I would figure top 30.
Would you think South Carolina would be ahead of them?
Yeah, well, just based on how they finished the year.
Yeah,
with that, I mean, it's hard to. I don't think there was a more impressive other than Georgia. You know, that for what they did after getting shellacked here. You know, that was, you know, I think that was the biggest miracle of the year when you come back and beat Clemson and Tennessee.
Exactly. You know. David Whitley is always entertaining and informational, and you can read him in Gainesville Sun, many other Gannett papers, and glad to have you on the program. As always, David, enjoy your writing and enjoy your time together with me on Tuesday nights.
Enjoy it. Give Sammy a pat on the head for me.
Yeah, we're happy about Sammy, boy. We are really thankful for sure. We haven't seen him yet. We're waiting till they come over. So he'll get a grand dog's greeting from Matt.
You're
gonna
spoil
him. Oh yeah.
All right.
Whatever he wants, he gets. David, thank you so much.
All right, buddy. Take care.
David Whitley, Gainesville Sun. Quickly, this commercial break, and we've got coming around the corner. We've got Lauren and his trivia question, and then we're going to have Dan Bond on tonight. Yes, Dan Bond will be on. He does some good work for us on his gymnastics stuff, and I'm really learning. He's teaching me about it. I'm learning it, yeah. Right now, let's learn about Meldon Law, what's going on with them.
When you're a member of the Gator Nation, you know what it means to never back down. Meldon Law has been a proud supporter of the Gator Nation since 1971. Two forces that won't back down. As the old saying goes, if you can't beat them, join them.
Meldon Law, they won't back down. All right, to the Orange and Blue Room. He's standing by there. He's our resident coach, raconteur, and trivia meister. He's been doing pretty good. He kind of beat you guys up, although he's been giving you softballs. I'm waiting for it to get really a little harder when he wants to bear down. I think he's in a hole again tonight, though, because I'm 9 feet taller than him. There you go. Good evening, Lauren. How you doing, man?
Oh, wait, how you doing, buddy?
Good to see you. Good to hear from you. I'm doing all right. People are coming out want to know where's Lauren's trash and where's Lauren's question. Okay, already. We'll get to it. We'll give it to you. All right, it's coming. You want to update us on what's going on with the prizes? Anybody need to get information into you or anything?
Yeah, I got to get with my boy, Nat Blaylock, and get his information. And then
The mayor doesn't have it. My goodness, the mayor used to be on here every night. We rarely see him.
That's a hard working man, though, so I'm sure, you know, plus he got two youngsters in high school.
No, he got big time on us. He got big time. I'm calling him out right now. He used to be here every night. Now I don't ever see you anymore.
It's been going pretty good. So, tee this one up. I think this one's tough. If somebody gets this one, I'll be impressed. So,
all right, here we go. Let's hear it. Here it is.
Lauren Meadows with Gator Bait Media coming to you live from Spurrier's Gridiron Grill on the newly named Steve Spurrier Way at Celebration Point. Tonight's trivia question is a doozy. What former NFL and Super Bowl winning quarterback has the most passing yards against the Florida football team in any bowl game? Be the first to answer and you'll be entered into our monthly drawing for swag from Spurrier's Gridiron Grill and other prizes. With Gator Bait Media, this is Lauren Meadows with Tuesday Night Trivia.
That is hard. Super Bowl winning quarterback has the most yardage against the Gators. Well, I could think of one, but
tell Dan Bond he's eligible if he said right. I know. So tell him he's eligible.
Well, he heard you. He's right here standing by in the green in the orange and blue. So all right. So you get some – all right, my man. I don't know if you heard any of what I said to David Whitley about this rankings that came out or not, because it's getting time to get serious now about Billy Ball and what's going on with this team and get to prep and start talking about strategy and about players. And now that they got the players they're going to get, except for the remaining two or three they'll get in the portal. As soon as they make the cutdowns on and make their rosters in spring ball, there'll be several more, I'm sure, getting out, and maybe some good ones. We don't know, because what happens when you get two great, three great looking quarterbacks? You know, they ain't all going to stay. They want to get big egos. They're going to want to play. All right. So having said that, now, did you hear that list I read off earlier about how the ESPN ranked all these teams?
Yes, sir, I did.
All right, and then what was funny was obviously Georgia was one, and Alabama was four, Tennessee six, et cetera, LSU, top 10. But to go down the bottom, Florida's 20th, which might be a little high. And then this is the amazing thing. Auburn, who all people say they got a fantastic recruiting year, the people are excited about it, is 26. And South Carolina, the team of the hot team of the field, is 33rd. Now, I'm not sure.
Well, South Carolina lost a lot in the transfer portal, too. They lost a couple guys to Florida State that were big-time players. Maybe even they're outside of, I think they've lost a few guys, and maybe their best all-around offensive player, a kid that played tight end as well as running back for them. So they've had some issues, losing some guys, too. So, it's kind of wait and see. I was a little surprised that Florida was 20th, because I've talked to some people that really understand what's going on, and they've even said that they expect Florida, and I know Florida fans don't want to hear this, but to be worse than they were this year. So, I'm surprised. I mean, hopefully they know something we don't know, because, 20th could put you in a range of, 7-5, 8-4 football season, which would be an improvement. But, with questions at quarterback and things like that, I think that, Florida could be a little high. And, I would actually expect South Carolina to be a little higher as well. So,
Sorry, but I got to put a type on your face because you're so low. I can't get it. I can't get anywhere else. All right, that's a fair comment. Getting questions, getting answers in already, on guesses on this. I think I see the winner already, I believe, but yeah, I'm sure you
know. Yeah, it looks like somebody jumped all over it. I'm impressed.
All right, well, so get some smart people on here, man. Smart people. So Dan Bond says the floating head. That's what you have, floating head. All right, so now we're talking ball. Now, one thing I'm anxious to hear when you start writing pieces about the strategy, we think we know what they're going to do. We think we know what their offense is going to be. I doubt their defensive scheme will change that much. They're going to still play the creeper, as you pointed out in this article, and all that sort of stuff. We'll see how that front seven plays again. A lot of new faces there. And then the offense is really it. And then you start looking at what you got for personnel. We know that a lot of changes in the offensive line, more than I think they should have made, but that's just me. Maybe they had their reasons. With the other wide receiver positions, they got to step up. We got a few guys to step up there. We know about Ricky Pearsall, et cetera, but they got to find some ballers in there. Running backs are pretty well set. And now it looks like and Coach Spurrier made this point the other night talking. I asked him about coaching, and I asked him, I said, well, if you coach again, what would you do? So there's a few things I've learned that I would use. And I said, like what? He said, well, what I would like to do was I'd like to put the quarterback under center about 25% of the time. He hates the 4th-and-1 calls where they got a guy 4 yards behind the ball. You know, he doesn't like that. They're stupid. You know, well, we see what can happen. Certainly, they know how to run that at the high level in Philadelphia and Kansas City, especially Philadelphia. They almost never don't make it whenever Hurts to go sneaks for the first down. And when you're going for it so much more now, Lauren, than you did before, because they are going for it on 4th down a lot. I like it. It brings you changes the game. Spurrier did that a lot early on, especially. So anyway, I asked him about that. And I mean, this is a long question, but he wants to see it under center. And he wants those quick hitters. You know, those what we used to call crossbacks in high school. You know, those quick hitters, boom, boom, boom. Can catch those linebackers, you know, maybe a little bit of sleep. It makes it the dynamics of the line of scrimmage change. Your play action pass suddenly opens up and things happen when you can do that. Now, that's just my vision of what I see coming. Am I right or wrong?
Say it again, last part, I'm sorry.
My vision of what I think is going to happen is that I don't know whether they will have Mertz under center more, but there will be more decision making at the line of scrimmage. And I think you'll see more of those quick hits and getting the ball to the back in a hurry. And he does it now, some of those off-tackle plays and slants and whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'll see, you know, like I said, a commitment to the zone running scheme. You know, I mean, he's been very clear that, you know, the tight ends will be involved in the formations and things like that. And you can use the tight end with the offset, what you might call an H-back position, you know, with some split zones and things like that. But, you know, they're going to run, you know, like I said, a lot of the same zone run schemes and things like that. You know, trying to get the linemen to the next level to get to the linebackers. And, you know, the big thing is, you know, if the defense can get some stops and, you know, they want to maximize their possessions. And yeah, I mean, I think you'll see maybe 50-50, you know, shotgun, you know, and then Mertz under center, or whoever it may be, Jack Miller. I don't want to shortchange those guys, but you know, definitely everything will be built off the running game, and you know, just maybe not as much of the shotgun where it's, you know, zone read and the quarterback kind of pulls it, but just given that, you know, sometimes when you run from the shotgun, a lot of backs like that because they can kind of see things open up a little easier. Things like that. So, you know, I think we'll see a lot more of the same. The big thing is, and a lot of people have talked about it, you know, whoever the quarterback is, you know, obviously, like I said, off the running game, but in those play action opportunities, you know, getting the ball to the open man quickly, letting them get it in their hands and run with it, you know, and then just the ability to convert on third down, you know, making completions and that's the thing. And I think a lot of people underestimate Mertz maybe because of, you know, his time at Wisconsin, but I hope that, you know, maybe a change of scenery and things like that. But I think he could be somebody that comes in, steadies that position, you know, sometimes hits the check down, you know, a couple opportunities when I saw Anthony Richardson, if he'd have just went to, you know, linebacker drops away, and here comes a crossing route right behind it, and he just missed it. And if Mertz can just kind of master taking what the defense gives him, I think he'll be a lot more efficient than people expect. I mean, you think about it, you know, he really can't be any worse than Anthony Richardson. So, you know, and Anthony Richardson had his moments, but, you know, let's face it, his NFL future is built on potential, which we all know is through the roof. But if you just look at, you put the two quarterbacks side by side in their careers, they're about the same person. So, you know, like I said, I think they'll master what they want to do offensively. I'm not sure they have two tight ends that can actually really give them what they want to get. But like you said, the year is young. There will be some opportunities in the transfer portal. And I would say definitely another plug-and-play tight end, another plug-and-play receiver, and definitely a plug-and-play safety. I mean, I think that's a must. If they don't get that, I think it could be another long game. I'm talking about somebody who comes in, is a 7 to 8 tackle a game guy, you know, has, you know, 12 to 13 pass breakups, you know, going into game five or six, and just somebody that really understands the position back there and can kind of quarterback that defense. So, you know.
Interesting. Couple of notes on Mertz. I read this off of the night. Interestingly enough, I think Mertz, I have these numbers in front of me, but I think Mertz is like 19-13 in starts, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I looked up Florida's starts over the same period of time. As far as like 20 and something, you know. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Just, not that it really matters. This is just generically quarterbacks. Sure. He passed for about almost 2,000 yards last year, 19 touchdowns, but 10 picks.
Right.
Which is a little high. That's his mm-hmm. career, actually. It's not last year. So, and the other thing I found interesting about it was he got an NIL deal. He got a car, okay?
Yeah, Range Rover.
But they didn't, but he didn't get the car. He's got the discount on the car.
Oh, okay.
So I thought that was kind of interesting. You know, whatever. Right. I wondered if it had
been half price.
I don't know. I mean, I wonder what Rashada would have gotten. I think he'd gotten the whole thing.
90% discount.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I don't know. But I'm anxious to see the kid. I'd like to see him come in here. I think we, if you think about Billy's offense, again, I'm guessing on this. I don't know. I'm just visualing what it looks like. If you're talking about line of scrimmage decisions, under center stuff, whatever, quick handoffs, quick hitters, getting the ball to the hands of the right people, knowing what mm-hmm. play to book to go to, experience matters. You know, and slick, I think ball handling is underrated. In my opinion, ball handling is so important, especially when you're talking about running the RPOs and stuff, you know. So absolutely. I don't know how it's going to work out, but Billy must see something in Mertz.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, you know, if you turn on the high school tape, it's very impressive. And he's had his moments at Wisconsin. I mean, he's played at a high level. You know, you could arguably say that the Big Ten is the second best conference top to bottom in college football. They play a physical brand of football. So, you know, he's been hit. He's played in the elements and things like that. Obviously, we'll have to deal with rain, sleet, snow, it mixed yeah. kind of stuff, but it may rain and that kind of thing. So he's used to that. And I think he, you know, and like someone just said, Robert Turner, you know, Mertz hadn't won the job yet. And like I said, I mean, we're talking about Mertz because we haven't seen him in a Florida uniform. I think Miller and maybe even Max Brown deserve, you know, even though I think Max Brown, you know, chasing that baseball may put him behind a little bit, even though I'm sure he'll kind of bounce back and forth. Yeah. And that kind of thing. But, you know, I mean, you got to think that Mertz, just based on the amount of football he's played, is the front runner. But like you said, I mean, you know, Mertz could be somebody who, you know, a lot of that bootleg stuff and those kind of things. I mean, you know, buddy, there is some sleight of hand with that and some ball handling and things like that. And if those linebackers think, you know, that running back's got the ball, and they're definitely going to be paying attention to both ETN, Montrell Johnson and possibly Treyon Webb, who I think is going to really be a pleasing sight to Florida fans. I think he's phenomenal. I mean, and then you got the young man that came in from Tulane as well to kind of steady the ship there. You know, when they put it in that belly, and if that old line kind of gels, I mean, when you get that run read, man, you got to honor it. And if Mertz can make those quick throws right behind those linebackers, when they kind of come up and then spread out to vacate, and you got the Ricky Pearsalls and Xavier Hendersons and some of those guys that in their second year in this offense could really prosper. And I mean, Mertz, just like I said, throw completions, not, you know, you don't have to be Superman. Just get it in the guy's hands and you go from there. So I think that, you know, like I said, I think it's, and then like I said, on defense, you know, another year, I will give Patrick Toney this. I think he comes with the respect and admiration from fellow defensive coordinators, including a guy like Will Muschamp, who we all know does a great job coaching defense, has said on a couple occasions what he feels about Toney. And if you look at his progression, even at Louisiana, you know, defense got better every single year. And, you know, a lot of that is, you know, I always heard an old saying, you don't practice defense, you play defense.
Yeah.
So the better those guys get, I think you could see an improvement. And I think they've upgraded up front. Big Dez says he's down to about 385. And, you know, so down, just being able to stuff the run, you know, I mean, exactly. it could really help.
Well, look who's
there.
Here.
He is.
Bringing Dan on aboard. Yeah, there he is. I'm going to let you go ahead and give away and announce the trivia winner before we get Dan on here and talk about the gymnastics meet. And, Lauren, who you got as the winner?
We got Brian Joseph, who came in right quick with the answer. I thought I was stumping some people.
Wait, let's see what Dan was going to say. You say he knew it. Let's test him and see if he knew it. All right.
Did you know
it?
Can you hear it? Well, I was thinking actually Aikman as in the bowl game, but then when I saw Henning, I was like, yeah, I think that was him.
So Brian Joseph, Chad Henning in 2008, yeah. I think it was 373 yards. That was Tebow's Heisman Trophy winning year. Like I said, the Gators were kind of young, even played one of the Pouncies on defense. Kind of limped into that bowl game a little bit, but obviously we know what happened next year. And so, Chad Henney, who I was trying to throw a curveball, recently retired. So when I threw retired in there, mm-hmm. I thought I might throw some people off, but he announced his retirement yesterday and has had a great, you know, anytime you last that long in the NFL and walk out with two Super Bowl rings, I mean, you got to give it up. So
you can't fool our people. They're too smart, you know? Come on,
yeah.
Man. Yeah, so.
And we got some learned listeners.
Yeah, boy. All right, Lauren, I'll let you get out of here and let Dan tell us about gymnastics. And good job, as usual, Coach. Coach Lauren Meadows, he'll be with us Thursday night, Orange Bowl, but Thursday.
Good seeing you, Dan.
Buddy. Thank you.
Thanks, Lauren.
All right, Lauren Meadows. What's up there, Dan Bond, special correspondent?
Hello, sir. How are you tonight?
Well, I'm doing good. I'm going to have to do one other thing here before I get you started. You guys got to remind folks that the sponsorship of this program is brought to you by folks, TitanMRI.com, obviously, Bell the Law, and our friends over at Benstar Medical. Want to be sure to tell you about them. Have a proven reputation as a high-quality, patient-centered clinical research facility. Benstar Medical Research has a cutting-edge clinical research trial for things like Alzheimer's and psoriasis, osteoarthritis, migraines, etc. And they do great work here. You can sign up for these trials, be a part of them. If you'd like, you can go to Benstar.net, find out more about that. In some cases, compensation for time of travel. Since their inception in 1998, Benstar has participated in more than 700 clinical research trials, looking for better ways to take care of us. Renstar Medical Research, seeking tomorrow's answers to the health questions of today. And here's my gymnastics coach, Dan Bond. I'm learning. I loved your story tonight, talking about all the people have no idea how big gymnastics is. And you made a point tonight to talk about the biggest crowd in the Merriment Center this year, named after a basketball player, won't be basketball, right?
Right. Yeah, and then that Arkansas meet against Florida, that was their largest crowd. They moved over to Bud Walton and had 11,000 plus for that meet. So, I mean, it's all drawing it in. Last week's Gator meet was a record with 9,600 in the O-Dome. So, I mean, it's definitely popular. There's only four more meets left this season. Next week's Trinity's last home meet. So that should be huge. Wish I could be there for that. But I will be there the following week at Oklahoma when it's basically one versus two, which will be exciting. So I'm looking forward to that, too.
Well, you've enlightened us a lot with gymnastics. And it's got to be such a big sport. And tell me again how you got involved being such a fan of gymnastics.
Well, when I moved out from Florida and moved in Dallas.
You're in Jacksonville, right? Which you were in
from Jacksonville.
Yeah.
So originally grew up in Ponte Vedra Beach, and my mom was born in Jacksonville also. So
love Ponte Vedra Beach. Lived there a year.
Old school Florida, for sure. And moved to Dallas, started checking out some Gator stuff that was nearby, the gymnastics championship is in Fort Worth every year, so it's set at the same venue. So I found that out. Florida was there back when they won the three titles back in 13, 14, 15. So that was really when I first started following them and just got hooked there, seeing such a quality. By the time you get to that level, especially, like, every athlete that's out there is super good. And I remember watching it when I first started. I was like, well, that was great. That was great. That was great. You know, it was kind of hard to figure out what was wrong, but unless they fell down. And then as you follow it a little more, you kind of pick up on what they're trying to do and what, you know, when they're doing combinations of flips or turns. It's so you kind of pick up on that and see, you know, the bonus points that the women are trying to do. And really with this squad, Florida is just loaded with like five All-Americans, seven U.S. national team members. You just don't see that. Like, say, LSU that they play Friday has three or four girls that have done every event, every meet. And you'll notice if you follow the gymnastics that they've been tinkering with the lineup, having a few girls that are specialists in, say, the vault or in the bars or on the floor come out. And that helps rest Trinity and Leanne Wong and Kayla DiCello for the big time for postseason.
Boy, has she been a pleasant surprise, huh?
Oh, man, yeah. Yeah, I thought Hurd was going to have really a good year this year, but she hasn't come back from her knee injury. So I think she's been shut down for the year. She hasn't done anything the last two meets, and she'll be ready to roll next year. And with DiCello, she's the first freshman to get a 10 this season in the nation. And, you know, she got one last week on the uneven bars, and then Trinity came after her, looked better, didn't get a 10, and then Wong finished out, looked just as good and didn't get a 10. So sometimes you get frustrated, and I know we had talked about no booing in gymnastics. And
yeah,
definitely does seem like, since you mentioned that there has been quite a bit of booing in the O'Connell
Center. All of a sudden there is some. Russian judges.
That's grown over the years, yeah. And people see Trinity do such an amazing job night after night after night.
Yeah.
I think some of these judges just don't give her the 10, even though that same routine will get a 10.
Well, you just say it. Go ahead. They're being hard asses, okay?
All right. They're all Russian judges, David said. Yeah. Bunch of Russian judges in there, like David said.
A little kudos here for you, for your buddy Lauren Meadows. The best gymnastics analyst in the SEC. And let me call upon some of that savvy right now. You wrote this. You said you teach us about gymnastics, and we give you more liberty to write and interpret it because you know the subject. And when you wrote these, you're teaching, it's like the road meets are crucial. You wrote your rankings are your average score, so you have more control over where you're ranked than, say, football. Your postseason seeding is your top three home scores and your top three road scores. With Florida traveling to Norman, Oklahoma on March 3rd, the opportunities are getting down to the wire. Only four more meets until the SEC Championship March 18th in Duluth, Georgia. Now, who writes like that? Nobody writes gymnastics like that. Teaching, that was good stuff there, right, man?
So yeah, like basketball, you want to peak at postseason. Mm-hmm. So it's okay that they're not ranked number one. I saw somebody post they were upset that they fell to number three and Michigan went to number two. Mm. And I was like, well, it's just all on your points.
Yeah.
It doesn't really, it wasn't that, but somebody voted Michigan above Florida, which is a nice part of gymnastics. If you do great, you get 198 each week, you're going to be number one. Like Oklahoma has three 198 plus.
Yeah.
Scores this year.
But there is that subjective judging too, which also factors into
Definitely. I think traditionally those Oklahoma judges score them pretty high year after year. Because, when you watch them head to head, especially last year in that national championship final, Florida looked better to me, the better team, but they blew it on the vault. So everybody needs to kind of keep an eye on that vault. Routine, that's the first one at home, that's the second one on the road, if they can keep that score up, I think they have a chance of winning it all this year for sure.
Seems like so much of how you stick your landing, everything you do, just for so much of that seems like at the end. Let me just mention these two factors before I let you go. I like the idea that what you said and pointed out that Florida can get a 10 almost any time from several different people, which is what's exciting. And you also proposed maybe they should have some prop bets for the perfect 10s. Do you have one?
You know, like the blue Gatorade bet for the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
Who's going to get a 10 on what?
Do you have one for gymnastics? Who gets it on what event?
I mean, your kind of your lock would be Trinity Thomas on the floor because she has the most 10s in that event. And then her on the beam would be her next 10 event. You know, you'd have to kind of stack the odds, maybe 2-1 on the floor and 3-1 on the bars.
Yeah.
Something like that. For the long shot, you'd probably want to do like Blakely on the floor. I think she's due a 10 Friday.
Really? That's a good one. Who's the next 10? And it would be on the bars on the floor. And isn't the floor where Trinity shines?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Last week I thought Blakely had a 10. She fell out of bounds her second meet, and she didn't even compete the first meet on her floor. But she's capable of getting a 10, and she was really pumped up this last meet. So I expect her to do really well at LSU.
Okay, so well, I'm gonna make the over.
Look for her to be the fourth Gator to get a 10 this season, which would lead the nation with four athletes with 10s.
I'll make the over-under on the score 197.5. Okay.
There you go. That's a pretty good one.
<We'll> go for See, I'm learning real fast. Dan Bond, he'll be covering the event and writing for us on Saturday. Thank you for all your contributions.
Certainly. Winner buys a Spurrier Ale at Spurrier.
We can do that. Yeah, we got one. Wait a minute. Hold on.
You got one back there somewhere.
I had one. Somebody took it out.
I've got the shirt here.
You do? Yes. Looking good. Looking sharp. Very good. Yes. You should have been there Friday night. It was special. I know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would have been nice.
Dan Bond, he's a special correspondent in Texas and next to go do softball. Dan, great being with you. Thanks for being on the show and thanks for the article.
Thanks, sir.
All right.
See you later. Go Gators.
Who is, yeah. So here's the deal. Dan gets such joy out of this. It's obvious. And boy, isn't it nice to see someone enjoy what they do. And Dan, he works in Dallas in the retail business. And so he's not obviously does it for a living. He does a terrific job. And it may be more interested this year in what's going on because of what Dan writes and having him on the show. So I want to thank him. We also want to thank our listeners and viewers and sponsors of the show and our guests tonight, including Dan, including David Whitley, who was on earlier, and Lauren Meadows and his trivia. Thanks to Freddie Weeby for all he does there out there at Spurrier's. And we'll call it a night. Back tomorrow night. We have other special guests for you tomorrow night. It's going to be fun again, so tune us back in and see what we got going on here on the Buddy Martin Show. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching, and we'll be back tomorrow night. Same time, same station on the Buddy Martin Show.